This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Welcome to Lock and Key Unlocked, a podcast about Lock and Key on Netflix, as well as the comic book source material by Joe Hill and Gabriel Rodriguez. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are going to be talking about Season 2 of Lock and Key, Episode 4, Forget Me Not. Now, you don't forget to go watch the episode on Netflix because we're going to spoil it
there?
Right now. But brief overview of what happens. Justin, I think before we got on, you called this a little bit of a middling episode.
It's sort of a middling episode, but let me just
Before we get into that,
you say we're going to spoil this episode. I prefer to think we're going to celebrate it. Despite its middling nature, we're going to celebrate it.
That's right.
Celebrating sounds like it died a little bit. We're going to celebrate the life of this episode.
It died? Celebrations?
Exclusively
go to funerals?
Every time I wander into a birthday party, I'm like, whoa, you're going to die someday.
Who died?
We're going to celebrate using the ghost key.
Yes, we're going to celebrate using the ghost key. Now, a bunch of different stuff happened in this episode. The main thing that we're dealing with is the fallout of the previous episode where Duncan got Uncle his memories Dunk. Back. However, as we find out this episode, just because he got his memories back doesn't mean he remembers magic. Ooh. So as Bodhi describes it partially through the episode, they broke Uncle Dunk, which is very unfortunate. Dunk. So that's a lot of what they're dealing with here. Also, same thing with Jackie, who's slowly losing her memory of magic. Both for Uncle Duncan and Jackie, we're definitely getting ramped up here in terms of the reasons that they need this memory key to get things back. That's what they're starting to head towards. Meanwhile, Gabe and Eden are essentially reassessing at this point, now that they are out of Whispering Iron. How do they create this weird key that they want to create, whatever purpose it has? And while they're clashing, Scott points out to Kinsey that maybe things are not okay with Gabe and Eden. He thinks potentially it's in a smoochy-smooch direction. Instead, it turns out to be in a little bit of a stabby-stab direction.
Stabby-stab.
Kinsey doesn't necessarily know that yet. But she starts to become suspicious as well of Gabe and Eden and everything that's going on there. And that's sort of where we end up in the episode. You know, Gabe has some Whispering Iron by the end, so presumably we'll see a key sometime soon. Lots of other things go on here. Like Justin said, I don't think there's anything wrong with a middle league episode. You need episodes.
That's why! Stop saying it! It's not a middling episode, all right?
Sniveling episode. That's what I think.
Really. Pete, you're starting to sound like a middling child right now.
Listen, she got her fear back. There was a lot of great things that happened this episode. I'm not going to sit here and let you just
sounds like you got your fear back of us saying the word middling.
Yeah. Yep. Pull that right out of the old brain pan. As I open Pete's head key, close.
Well, let's talk about some of the plot lines that happen in this episode then. Pete, since you're gung-ho, you, I believe, thought it was the best episode of the season so far, opposite of me and Justin. Go ahead. What made this the best episode ever?
First off,
unlock it for us, Pete.
Oh, thanks. I would love to. First off, you had the ghost showdown, which I was very excited about. You're seeing the parasite on the back. You're getting a lot of key information here. And the fact that you guys are brushing over this shit like it doesn't matter and it's a middling episode makes me very angry.
Here's the thing. Just because it was a middling episode doesn't mean that it's bad. I loved the ghost confrontation. I think we learned a lot that, you know, fuck
you don't
Chamberlain
fuck with
the
Lot. Yeah. I'll tell you what. If you think about the middle of things, the middle of the burger is one of the best parts.
It is celebrated as the best part. Definitely.
Yeah. I don't like middles. Give me the rest of the burger. Thanks.
This season premiere of Lock and Key was like a real bun of an episode.
Some are. I agree with you on the ghost stuff. I thought this was great, not only because it followed up on that scene from Chamberlain Locke earlier, but we speculated a little bit about that weird shot in the bush with Chamberlain, and it turns out that was Sam Lesser. And something I like about this as a fan, I thought, oh, that's great. I forgot about that from the last season. Sam was left as a ghost. We know this from the comic books, but I didn't necessarily remember that from the show or think necessarily that's why they had the shot in the bush, that it was Sam washing. it's something that pays off for longtime fans, and it's the opposite of what we talked about with the first episode, which was really very welcoming for new fans of the series. Right. But as a longtime fan, I'm cool with it.
Well, and a couple things about this. First off, I love how Gabe shows up and Chamberlain's like, oh, look who's here. Just like waiting for him in the graveyard. Like, what's up, kid? How's your whispering iron game? Not so hot, huh? Have a little big splode because you didn't think about what you were doing. And Chamberlain, I love how quickly he's like, you lied to me. He's like, you're damn right I did.
Yeah.
I lied to you right out of the gate.
You lied to me first, bro. I saw your shit.
And then
I did want to ask what you guys thought of the design of the parasite, of the demon that we see there, because it sort of looks like a slug a little bit.
A giant leech, asshole. Come on.
Leech, sure. Oh, I'm sorry. Slugs and leeches are very different.
Leech guy over here.
Uh-oh. The leech protector has logged on.
Anyway, you went to Cornell, asshole. You know the difference between slugs and leeches.
I understand there's a difference here. And I think visually it makes sense. The way they're doing the whispering iron makes sense, but the way that they designed this parasite, this demonic parasite here. But at the same time, I was bummed because I missed Gabriel Rodriguez's design of the, I don't even remember, I'm sorry, what they're called necessarily in the comic book, but those creatures in the comic book, they're different than how they treat them as demons in the show. So okay that it's different, but his design is so good. I missed that a little bit.
Yeah, the sort of more xenomorphy type H.R. Geiger inspired maybe demon. What I like about this is it matches with, it sort of feels like a piece of the whispering iron, like a living bit of iron around there. So I think that's cool. And I really like the way that Sam is introduced without any context, reintroduced. And that makes you wonder, like, what have Sam and Chamberlain been doing all that time? They're buddies?
Yeah, what do they talk about?
Also,
I feel like they have very little in common, but it does feel like Sam seems to be doing good. Like, we think Chamberlain Locke is good. Yeah. Sam, notably, not good.
Yeah. Maybe they're Sam's like, I like killing people, and Chamberlain's like, I'm dead. They're like, lots in common.
Icebreaker. Icebreaker.
Stop.
Let's think do some the trust
problem,
falls.
The problem that happened was that Chamberlain was way too confident in Sam's ability to fly. Gabe outflew him at the end there. That was heartbreaking to watch. You gotta give somebody a little bit more of a lead.
Pete, I don't mean to interrupt you here, but Chamberlain 100% gave it up at the end there.
Yeah.
Way too easy. Like,
oh, I'm shiftily looking to the side. Go, Sam. Go, fly. Yeah. Sam should have just gone. What was he waiting for?
As soon as he started talking Christ. To him.
Yeah. Let's be honest. Chamberlain's a bit of a, like, he loves the drama. He's a messy bitch, and he's bringing, like, he wants to play it out as a little run and gun, and we get the fun battle. Talk about some great acting from Gabe with the battle for Gabe's body.
Yeah, stop punching yourself, Gabe.
Yeah.
That was fun.
And I really like that we leave Sam is out still outside, still a ghost, and very much mad at Gabe Dodge.
Yeah.
Even angrier, if possible. So
do you think we're going to see at some point during the season a second round ghost down?
I hope so.
Death.
You gotta have a second round ghost down after you set it up like that. Come on.
You gotta. Well, yeah.
And have another race.
Let's remember that Gabe walked out with the ghost key here. Right?
Yeah,
didn't give the key back to Bodhi, which
not.
I thought was... In general, I feel like Gabe is behaving more and more irrationally. And this move where he goes to gets in through Bodhi. Bodhi knows what he's doing. Later, lies to Kinsey, like, oh, I just skipped school. That's such an easy lie for him to get caught in. And especially with the fact that Bodhi's going to be like, oh, Gabe took the ghost key. Kinsey could get it back. When did he do that? Oh, when he lied to me. Boom.
When he
shattered.
Said he was just sitting at his house alone. In a room
bad line.
Up. Yeah,
exactly. He lives at school. Yeah. You got to have a better excuse for not being
Does
at school
he
when you
live
at school.
I think he lives in the lives dorm. At school. Is he in the dorm as well?
I believe so, because at the party that beautiful, beautiful Josh threw, where he delivered that pizza.
That guy, pizza. I know we're
friend.
Jumping around here a little bit. That guy is so handsome. I would not mind going to a chowder party with him if you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, because that's what I'm talking about.
Stop. Stop it,
welcome to Chowder Town, Josh. Population, me and you.
That was my favorite weird detail of the episode that I don't know if I love or I hate. The fact that he's like, yeah, I'm going to buy vats of chowder teen party.
The whole thing was weird. That their whole relationship is very strange. Like that conversation, yeah. He's like, yeah, this is why my wife used to be in charge of my love. Oops, I don't know what I'm saying to you. And then later, Nina's like, Kinsey, can I talk to you about talking to a man? And it's like, what? Kinsey's bad at that too. What are you doing? And then Kinsey doesn't have time for her mom. The whole thing, I was like, it's so weird.
I get it from Nina. I don't have a problem with it from Nina because as far as we know, I believe Nina and Rendell were basically sweethearts forever, right? So they were together forever. They had three kids together. She hasn't dated anybody. She struck up a little bit of a flirtation with the detective the last season, Detective Matuku, I think was his name.
Yep.
And this season she's got Josh, this unbelievably hot guy, and that's got to get you flustered. That's got to get your chowder going, if you know what I mean.
That's what I'm saying. Like, when you have a ticket to the smoke show, you're like, this is nerve-wracking. I'm looking forward to the smoke show. I love smoke shows. Mm-hmm. And once you get to the smoke show, you're like, oof, there's so much smoke here. Yeah. What am I talking about?
That guy can't even, like, it drives me nuts, this Josh guy. You know, he looks like he has a hard time putting on shoes. It's ridiculous.
What does that mean?
He's running
around. He's too hot for shoes?
He's just like, what do I do with pizza? Put it on the table, asshole. Like, it's, he's a little.
Well, to be fair, this is the first time he's learned about the concept of pizza. Previously, he thought the main thing that people ate was chowder. And so this pizza is new to him. And wait until he finds out that you could fold it like this.
Oh, yeah. Eat it like Eden, which is all in one giant smush bite.
She knows how to eat.
Yeah.
You know, the thing with Josh is he was like, he grew up watching the Teenager Ninja Turtles where they would just go crazy for chowder and they were like, chowder time. And they're just like, they love chowder. So, you know, it's just a different world. He grew up in a very hot suburb where they had only chowder stuff.
Yeah. Oh, my favorite was you'd see those commercials and the guy would go, chowder, chowder. That was really fun.
Yeah. Oh, you mean Little Caesar's chowder house?
Yes.
What a popular chain.
Yeah, I'd usually get the two chowder deal when I was growing up. That was good. We'd finish it off with my family and smell disgustingly like fish.
Yeah. Bottomless chowder.
We could move on, please.
I don't think we could ever move on from Chowder and Josh, the two hottest things in existence.
No. I'd love a chowder.
What are you feeling, in all honesty, about Nita and Josh's relationship at this point? I mean, Justin, I know you said it was weird. You hate it, Pete?
I hate it. Yes, absolutely hate it. Because I don't trust Josh at all.
Well, here's the thing. I'm starting to trust Josh more for a couple reasons. One, he has whispering iron, doesn't know what it is, knows it's important, but keeps it in a very obvious box. I mean, make that a necklace. Put it in your hot pocket, your hot jeans pocket or something so you can keep your hands on it. Because he talks about the
which pocket is your hot pocket, Justin?
The tiny one. What things important to you do you store in a hot pocket?
The hot pocket's a very tiny pocket in your jeans because there's the regular pockets and there's that extra tiny one. That's the hot pocket.
Because
that's
I store most pocket. Of my money in hot pockets, the food.
Yeah, that's good. That's investing.
I buy a bunch of pepperoni hot pockets and I put all my money in there and then I scatter it around the house. Because if Pete comes over and he eats one, I still got lots of other hot pockets.
Interesting. Pepperoni hot pocket. I only have chowder hot pockets. What is a pepperoni hot pocket? Yeah. What does that taste like?
You got to stop taking financial advice from Jim Gaffigan, man.
Well, let me say, you put your money in a popular hot pocket like pepperoni, you're going to get robbed. You got to put it in an awful hot pocket like pea or something, a pea pocket.
Mm-hmm. My favorite thing about chowder hot pockets, though, is the slogan, bring on the hot goosh.
Yeah.
What?
That's true. That's also a chowder hot pocket is like chowder water balloon. We were getting so many hot chowder water balloon fights when I was a kid. So fun. Dangerous. You don't want to get texted. It's like Squid Game, but
is happening?
Did you grow up in one of those places where they had chowder on tap? Like you go to the playground, you could just stick the balloon right on there and get the hot chowder on the balloon.
I was on the track team, and after a big race, we'd go run into the locker room, fill up our Nalgene's with a bunch of chowder and just guzzle it because we were so dehydrated.
I was always very jealous of the people on the rich side of town because they had both Manhattan and New England on tap.
Oh, I know. I'm from the New England side of the tracks as well. I don't have any of that uptown Manhattan shit. Oh, but I dated a girl from the Manhattan chowder side of town. What a romance.
I love a nice Manhattan chowder girl. They smell like tomatoes. You know what I'm talking about?
What a tomato.
Speaking of uptown, Tyler, classy move, takes Jackie to Bath, you know, Jane Austen's house. That was nice.
Mm-hmm. iTunes comment, 5 stars. Talk a lot about chowder, though.
Didn't understand the chowder talk on the Lock and Key podcast. They kept bringing it up. The one host seemed mad about it, and he would randomly bring up other plot points in the episode to try to derail the chowder conversation. But nope, it only kept going back to chowder.
Great chowder cast. Yes, let's talk about Bath. Sorry.
Well, though, before we get to Bath, I do want to talk seriously. So I do think Josh is maybe not a villain, but he seems to have some knowledge that I think the Locke family will need about the history of Key House.
Hoping Gabe kills him.
Oh, my God.
Two very opposite ends of the spectrum. I agree with you, Justin, just in terms of I think it could go either way, honestly, at this point. Like, he could have nefarious means, but he seems way too dorky and oblivious for that. Granted, we got the same thing from Gabe the last season, where he did turn out to be evil. But I agree with you. There's certainly something going on with him in terms of the history. We got the colonial soldiers and the redcoats right at the beginning of the season. Now we have him talking about kind of the same history. I think he said his relative was there back in the day,
the bad guys.
I feel like maybe his relative will be who had the demon in him, is what my guess is. And we're going to get a fun flashback, I keep saying.
Yeah, that. I do wonder, though, just because the rules on this show are different, are we going to get a sort of thing where the demon is passed down through family or something like that, potentially?
Whoa.
And I don't know.
Well, and I do think Josh is playing everything a little, to Pete's point, is a little weird. He is a little out of touch with the modern world. So there may be something to what you're saying, Alex. I also think Nina's hesitant to get in this relationship with Josh because all of the people she dates die. So that's stressful as well.
Yes. The scene where he's showing everybody around his office, though, was very funny and fun, even though it was kind of a dumb thing to do, given students probably aren't going to care about this stuff, and it does ultimately tip Gabe off to where the Whispering Iron is, but very fun anyway.
Lights Doug up. Makes Doug happy.
Doug loves it. Anything that makes Doug happy makes me happy, honestly.
Yeah.
Aww.
Do you want to talk about Tyler and Jackie, Pete?
Yes, please. Thank you. So Tyler is kind of struggling with what to do with Jackie. She is aging and getting more into adulthood, and he's still trying
to
live.
She's decrepit by this point. Go on.
And the Peter Pan world. And so it's a great idea, you know, like for her birthday, which is very sweet what he did for her lockers. Of course, the other people around her locker got to be pissed, but I think it was super sweet. She really appreciated it. And then, you know, they quickly go to Bath, you know, and it's just, it's a nice thing to do.
Oh, nothing like a couple's bath, I always say. What I like about this is they find out Uncle Dunk has the Anywhere key. They are suddenly like, whoa, how do you have that? Everyone's a little stressed. Bodhi, especially, the most responsible member of the Locke family.
Yeah, right.
Tyler, rather than worrying about the fact that Dodge may be back or never left, which is what's actually happening, immediately is like, I'm going to go do something I want
to
do.
Well, to his credit, he did say, I am very concerned, and then walked away for the whole evening.
Yes.
Sure, that covers it.
But I do think this is just making pushing Tyler closer to the edge and making him more frantic to get this memory key that we've established in this episode through Aaron Voss.
I really like how the actress playing Jackie, I think her name is Genevieve Kang, but I might have that wrong, is playing this. We talked about this before, but it's a very weird and I think purposely alarming thing to see essentially a teen going through dementia. You know, that's essentially, I think, the way that they're playing it, the way that they're writing it. It's very upsetting to see, particularly when she's in Bath and then suddenly loses all knowledge of magic. It's hard to wrap your head around. I don't know if you guys went through the same thing, but I was certainly watching these scenes, putting myself in her place and trying to think, what would my reaction be, you know, if that happened? Would I freak out? Would I be like, whoa, cool, I'm in England, and just kind of roll with it? And ultimately, I think the reaction makes sense for the show, but it's a fascinating thing to think about, while you're watching.
Well, and I think basically the way that they're depicting it, it feels like when you are using magic, you're in a state of it feels like panic almost. So, like, I don't think she could have relaxed into it. It feels like because they were there and there was no ready-made knowledge and they were still sort of using the magic just by being there, she was not going to be out of that state until she was back home.
Also, what's interesting about this couple is they're kind of going through a lot of different rom-com scenarios right now. Like, they're doing the 51st dates, and there was even that mention of, like, hey, I made this video that explains it, but she doesn't want any of that. And now, you know, we're getting the kind of Notebook where one of them's memory isn't really gone, and the other one's trying to hold the love together. So
no,
it's
spoilers. I haven't seen the Notebook yet.
Mm, you should see it. Yeah. That, she's playing by memory.
Yeah.
Nice. Wow.
I thought you were going to say something else. I think overall this relationship is good. The way they're playing it is good. The way it's playing off Tyler is really good as well. And I think this was a very sweet moment. Tyler and Jackie, yeah. To be honest, I don't know if I was totally sold on them in the first season, but I'm pretty sold here. They have really good chemistry.
Yeah. Agreed.
It's good relationship, and it's very sad and giving me a lot of anxiety right now.
But it's nice to see all that Tyler's doing to try to give her last couple of days or however it's going along ago. And it's heartbreaking to see her be like, I don't want to do this anymore. And he's like, please give me more time. I think we can beat this. But it's going to get to this thing of, like, if she doesn't want it, like, Tyler, what are you doing? You know what I mean? So,
Why don't we move from one relation to another and talk about Gabe and Kinsey? Now, Pete, you're a Kinsey shipper. Is it tough for you to see them fighting like this in this episode?
So I'm very excited that, you know, Scott is talking, you know what I mean? Like, people have got to get Kinsey aware of how much of an asshole Gabe is. So, and the fact that she's got her fear back was huge. And also the fact that Bodhi knew how to get your fear back.
I'm telling you.
You've got to be still and, you know, concentrate and your fear will come to you. I was like, wow, that's deep, Bodhi.
Bodhi gets it. Oh, I mean, I think that's the overarching sort of idea of the whole show is, when you're young, that's when you believe in magic and when you can really experience magic. It's in this space when you get older, when you start to be a little more selfish and there's all these different things happening in your life and the magic starts to weaken at the same time it's getting exploited by all these different characters.
That's deep, man. You should raise children, because I feel like you could really talk about the aging process really well.
Getting back to something you mentioned earlier, Justin, I think Gabe is really not doing himself any favors here. There's that scene where Gabe is just standing in the middle of the party staring at Eden.
Yeah, that's, come on.
Least amount of chill possible. And I understand he's a demon, but, like, he's got to know Kinsey is there. And he's got to know Kinsey is going to see him at some point. He clearly doesn't care because he's so frustrated and annoyed at Eden as it is. But at the same time, that's going to potentially be his downfall, if anything.
I think so. Yeah, he cares for Kinsey outside of all of the plotting in a weird way, and he wants to sort of win her in a way from Scott. I think that's a real rivalry that's happening. And at the same time, he's mad at Eden. I think he was thinking about how he could get the demon out of Eden to turn into Whispering Iron, was maybe what he was thinking then.
Yeah, that's
and
evil.
He's just all over the place throughout the whole episode right now. And I think next episode, maybe even, we're going to see it start to really unravel.
Yeah. Also, we got the huge news, which I can't believe you guys weren't rocked by. You know, Scott didn't get into Rochester, you know, and I want to just say to Scott, you know, if you want to come to the real Rochester, we're more than happy to have you, you know, come have a garbage plate, hang out in the real Rochester. It's a beautiful area.
Yeah. Now, how do you guys usually bar people from Rochester? Because they didn't really go over that in the show too much. Do you have city walls or something?
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, it's kind of like a big chain link fence type of thing. Mm-hmm. But also, to get in, you got to eat a whole garbage plate. And if you can't do that, you can't get in.
I applied to the garbage plate program at Rochester, and they said they couldn't allow me in unless I hit myself in the face with a shovel over a dozen times.
Yeah,
I was too smart. We needed to dumb down a little bit.
You got to be committed if you want to get in. You know what I mean?
And I hope Scott applies again next year, and I hope he can really make it, because it would be really wonderful to see the two of you hanging out together.
Agreed. I feel bad that Scott didn't get in, but man, that was a crazy kind of reveal in this app, the way it was not like told. Mm-hmm. Kinsey had to kind of find out.
That was interesting. What do you think it's going to mean for their relationship going forward, though?
I'm pulling for Kinsey Scott all day.
Well, I guess what I mean is that he didn't get in. Is that something that's potentially going to weigh on him in a certain way? Will he? I don't know. I could see a world where potentially he weirdly blames Kinsey for it in some way. You know what I mean?
Take it easy on that.
It's not her fault. I'm just saying it could be like he was concentrating too hard on his relationship with Kinsey, and so he never made it into Rochester.
Wow, interesting, yeah. Interesting. I do think, well, it depends on how things go down here with the love triangle, because it does feel like Kinsey's mad at Scott in this episode for the way that he acts with her, doesn't really trust him because he's talking about a magical reason that she thinks couldn't have happened. So, but I think she does when she finds out that he didn't get in, she's upset for him, but also a little happy that he's going to be there. So it's complicated, but I think they're going to come out all right.
And it's tough, you know, I mean, you send out a bunch of applications, you apply for your dream school, but you know, sometimes you got to be able to kind of roll with those no's in life. So it'll be interesting to see how Scott rebounds. You know what I mean? We can't all get into Cornell.
That's right. You got to roll with the no's. Like sometimes I end up having to eat like a potato soup. Or some sort of
other wet,
like a bisque
goop.
Yeah, like a bisque,
like a chowder of some sort.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying. Sometimes I don't get my chowder, and I have settle for a different, lesser soup, a broth.
Well, we don't have chowder, but we do have Pepsi. Is that okay?
I'll take it. Just put it in the microwave for 20 minutes.
Let's talk about Unkadunka, because there's some big stuff that's going down in him with him this episode. Aaron Ashmore is doing a great job here, given the fact that he was not really in the first season. There's a lot of emotional weight and a lot that needs to go on with him. And I'll tell you, in particular, the scene where he's lying on the bed and Bodhi won't go away and is like, when are you coming out? And he's like, please just let me lie down for like 2 minutes. As a parent, I felt that.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah. I bet the kids are just banging on the door like, give me a minute. The kind of like thing of him like sitting on his bed and then going and getting those photo albums. And I think, you know, since we're old, we should explain, like, before people would take pictures, you know, on a phone, there was like a thing called a camera. Mm-hmm. And it would just take one picture and then you would put it in an album and save it. That's how much you like that one picture.
I'm not familiar as a cool teen myself, but go ahead.
Okay, yeah. Right. Yeah. Let me ask you. So an album is like paper Instagram?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. If you could only, you know, take your favorite 10 photos, you know what I mean?
How do people comment on him?
You would get a pen out and then write on the phone album like, hey, cool pic.
Sounds inefficient to me. No, thank you. Thank you so much for the offer.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm good. What did you guys think about the Uncle Dunk plot line in this episode and what's going on with him?
I think it's good. I mean, it's stressful. It feels like he's really suffering. We see a lot of him truly suffering this episode. Can't deal. But I think, we're building toward him reliving the moment where he made the key. I think that's going to be an important thing, especially to sort of bring together a couple of the plot lines. Gabe and Eden's plan at the end of the episode is to kidnap Kinsey so that she can make a key, potentially. But she doesn't know how to do that. I think Uncle Duncan, when his memories are unlocked with the memory key, will know how to do that.
Hmm. Also, Alex mentioned the acting, and yeah, Uncle Dunk is going through a lot, and we kind of had him at the end breaking down and crying, but then at the like last second before we had the fade to black, it was almost like he was okay with where his memories were, or maybe like he got a kind of memory that kind of made things, because there was like a little bit of hope, a little bit of light in his eye just before it kind of cut to black there. So it gave me hope that maybe Uncle Dunk is going to be okay and not just kind of like.
Really? You know, I didn't get that at all. We're talking about, this is the scene at the end where he starts to picture Bodhi as young Rendell, right? Yep. And he's at this point, he's already discovered.
Or young him? Is it young him?
Is it young him? I thought it was young Rendell.
No, it's young him.
Oh, it's young him?
Yeah.
Huh. throwing yourself out the door.
Yeah.
I get
it. That's why he's like, you're not real. And then throws him out the door. And then both Bodhi and him are crying. And then as he's crying, he kind of like looks up last second before it fades to black. And then kind of like, oh, maybe he's got something.
I think next episode, we're going to get a search through Matheson Academy to find the memory key. We get the scenes we haven't talked about are Aaron, Voss, and Tyler trying to figure this out, and Kinsey as well. And they go into her memory, which I thought that was played really well as well, where she's like nervous to have to potentially be trapped back in her own mind again. But she goes in, gets the memory, they watch it, and they have a big clue to where the memory key is.
Yeah, but that's also huge for Aaron to do. Like, the fact that she's willing to kind of go back there, and then there's that moment where it's like, I promise I won't, like, let you be a vegetable in a fucking institution for a bunch of years. I mean, that's a hard promise. Like, you got to feel like, oh, man, this is exactly what I'm going to do after you say that out loud, right?
Wow.
Oh, you think Tyler overpromised and
under-delivered? Yeah, I was like, dude, what are you saying right now? Don't jinx it. Like, oh, man.
Yeah, I didn't necessarily see that as a problem. I agree with you both, who are saying the same thing twice in a row, that this was a good moment.
Yeah. Nice.
But yeah, overall, this plot line was really good. I liked Tyler and Aaron teaming up. I like how Aaron has added to the ensemble. I think she's really good.
Yes, great.
I think the clue that the key is at Matheson Academy is not very helpful because that's a huge place.
Yeah,
it's a place to start.
They'll figure it out. I've seen television shows before, and I think they'll figure it out. But it's like the keys somewhere in New York City is essentially what they just
come said. Come on, dude.
Well,
Academy in New York City is not the same size.
I also would say the keys in one of two locations we feature in this show. Yeah. Let's try the other one. Is sort of what was going on here.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm excited to see that. That'll be a fun sort of maybe race around the academy, try to get this memory key. And to your point, I do really like Aaron on the show. I'm curious if Nina is maybe going to start being like, why do my kids want to spend time with this my dead husband's ex, mm-hmm. and they don't have time to talk to me? So I think that'll be an interesting situation.
Well, we got that moment. Yeah, halfway through the episode, was this what you were going to bring up, Pete, about Nina confronting Aaron? You can talk about it.
Well, yeah, I just think it's like this is going to be – and because they almost had a real like, hey, we're both in love with the same guy. Let's share some stories moment. And then, you know, it got too emotional from Nina and she walked away. And then she walked in on Kinsey there with her and she was like, what's going on? And, of course, Kinsey was like blowing her off. And we got to see why Kinsey has a problem with her mom in this kind of like scene at the end there, because it's – Kinsey was like, Mom, I'm having a lot of issues with red flags and like knowing what to listen to and what not. I need some guidance. And she was just like, trust your gut, kid. I'm out. It was like, what the fuck kind of shit is that? You should be like, yeah, if there are red flags, it turns out you're dating a demon. You should kind of get out of that scenario. And of course, she's just, I mean, as parents yourself, you had to be upset about that moment.
No, I don't see any red flags with Josh. I just see like very hot sexual flags.
Right. She wasn't like talking about Josh. She was talking about Gabe. Asshole. She was talking about Gabe.
Oh, he seems like a nice boy.
Oh, my God.
What's one red flag with Gabe?
Name one. Just try to name one red flag about Gabe. I'd like to see it.
Oh, my God. I was a little disappointed. I was like, Nina, you deserve the cold shoulder after that fucking advice bomb that you give.
Wow.
She is trying so hard. And in terms of dramatic arc, I appreciated, you know, we're four episodes in the season, so there's not a lot, but I appreciated actually seeing a little bit more of that because it's kind of felt like, I talked about this a couple of episodes back, it is weird as a comic book reader from the first season of the show to see Nina be happy and settled. And that's what she's been in the first three episodes. And not that I want to see characters suffer, but seeing her be in a place where she's uncomfortable, doesn't know what she's doing, and losing control of her family, I was like, there's Nina. That's
the Nina I know.
That's
the
character I know. Here we go.
That's awful.
So I felt good about that. What other moments did you want to call out, if anything, from the episode?
Oh, man.
I think we covered all of them that I had. I really liked, despite the fact that this was sort of an episode advancing a number of plots at the same time, and it feels like we're sort of in the middle of it. I liked a lot of the stuff that happened, and I just think this show is great this season.
Yeah. Pete, what about you?
Yeah, I just think that the, you know, the Jackie-Tyler relationship, it was such a interesting conversation about, you know, the back and forth of, like, what somebody's ready for and what somebody, like, believes in was really interesting. And I love the complexity of their relationship. So I just think it's really enjoyable, and they're making a lot of smart choices with it.
I agree. And why don't we move it over to our next section and determine the key moment of the episode? Justin, you want to go first? What was your key moment of the episode?
I mean, there's a lot of little things happening here that I think will be important later. Well, I want to give it up for Chamberlain Locke and Sam. I think that's going to be a fun moment to bring back at the perhaps end of this season that'll have big implications, potentially getting into an episode that we really enjoyed, I think, in the comic, or an issue of the comic really enjoyed that may become an episode, where Bodhi becomes becomes an animal for a brief time.
Ooh, yeah. The Calvin and Hobbes issue.
Yeah, I'm going to give it up for Aaron finding out about the memory key. I think just in terms of moments, that's the big takeaway from the episode, right? Like, that's Tyler's plot line right now. Certainly that's the big thing with Duncan as well. It's not necessarily what's going on with Aaron, Eden and Gabe, but in terms of 2/3 of the major plot lines out of this episode, the memory key is where it's at. So that certainly points to where things are going forward. And like you said, maybe we get some sort of chase around Matheson Academy as the good guys and the bad guys both try to track down this key. Pete, what about you? Key moment.
I got to give it up for the Uncle Dunk moment, where he's kind of walking around in a little bit of a fever dream and goes to the workshop. And we saw the Whispering Iron. So I feel like the kind of clues dropping that Dunk is going to be the key maker moving forward is important. So I thought that was the key moment.
All right, there we go. If you'd like to support our podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about Lock and Key. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Lock and Key Pod on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast, and many more. Until next time, keep it locked right here.
A chowder balloon fight. Hot.